Disrupting conversation is not the veto. The actions of actual transacting economic actors deciding what software to run or not run is the veto. This denial of service on dialogue is not some noble or righteous crusade to save Bitcoin. It is an active attack on those economic actors and their ability to gain a better understanding to make an informed decision on whether to veto something or not. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we have got a fantastic read today. Another one brought to you from Shinobi all over over there at Bitcoin Magazine. Shout out to Michael Matliff, who put this in the Audionauts group, and I jumped on it pretty quickly. And I try to explain... I guess I probably don't do a super good job of it. I try to explain that I didn't actually fully agree with this article. I agree with the premise, but not necessarily with where he was applying it. But maybe I did. Maybe I did. I don't know. It's tough to say. I will let you be the judge. But I liked this article specifically because it's a kind of a call to arms to letting the discussion happen. And I think... regardless of whether or not we agree on any particular issue, I think that is actually a really, really important point to be made, that there is a denial of service, so to speak, on the ability to have dialogue. And we have lost something very critical in the community. I don't know. I hate referring to the community as some monolith, as if it's like a particular thing, but we do seem to have split up in the many different areas and the many different ways that we have these conversations, while the large platforms and the places where we are still actually kind of in the same place have devolved into nonsense. And I wanted to kind of explore that a little bit, and I wanted to cover this read just because I think Shinobi does a good job of kind of explaining why this is a problem and exactly how it's a problem. So we will go ahead and get into it. A quick thank you to Swan Bitcoin and CoinKite for supporting this show. Swan Bitcoin is a fantastic place to buy Bitcoin. And in fact, the next $10,000 that you buy has no fees on Swan. You can use my link right there in the show notes. And then when you get it and you set up your automatic withdrawal from Swan, you just set your threshold and then they will send it to your cold storage. Get yourself a gold card. Honestly, any of the numerous fantastic security devices from CoinKite, if you want to keep your Bitcoin safe and you want to know you hold your Bitcoin, Jesus, please just go to CoinKite, go to the link in the show notes, use my discount code because discounts are fantastic. All right, with that, let's go ahead and get into today's read from Bitcoin Magazine and many time returning on this show, author Shinobi, and it's titled A Denial of Service Attack on Consensus by Shinobi. The reason conversations around consensus are a dysfunctional mess is not because of the people proposing changes. It's because of the people refusing to listen in good faith. Conservatism, in the literal and not political sense, has always been a core part of the Bitcoin ecosystem. Satoshi himself was very cautious and thorough in his original design attempts, and developers since have tried to be very cautious and thorough in the development process after his departure. Numerous pieces of technology have been developed originally for Bitcoin, eventually being tested on other networks specifically out of that caution. Confidential transactions, one of the core pieces of technology underlying Monero. It was created by Gregory Maxwell for Bitcoin. It was not implemented due to large inefficiencies in terms of data size and because of the fact that it fundamentally changed cryptographic assumptions. All cryptography used in Bitcoin relies on the discrete log assumption, that factoring two prime numbers of large enough size is not possible. If this assumption breaks, everyone's private keys are crackable from their public keys. Confidential transactions and how they work would allow someone to secretly inflate the money supply instead of just cracking other people's keys, and no one would be able to tell because it obscures the transaction amounts from public view. Similarly, the SNARK scheme used in Zcash to provide zero-knowledge proofs for Bitcoin was originally a proposal for Bitcoin, ZeroCoin. This also was never implemented, out of conservatism and caution on Bitcoin itself. The entire cryptographic scheme relied on trusted third parties initializing it, and in order to remain secure, required users trust them to delete private key material used to initialize the system. This was deemed an unacceptable trade-off for Bitcoin. Even Taproot, which has been active for 3 years or so now, is a proposal ultimately made of two separate concepts going back to as early as 2012, MAST and Schnorr signatures. MAST is the idea of taking multiple possible spending scripts and turning them into a Merkle tree, so that only the path used is ever revealed on-chain. It took 9 years for those two ideas to go from being ideas to something actually implemented. Conservatism has always been core to how this protocol and network was developed. Recent proposals. I myself have been highly skeptical about any proposals floated around in the last few years since Taproot activation, preferring to be very conservative in what I choose to support. For instance, I have been arguing for the activation of BIP-119 Check Template Verify for years exactly because of how conservative and simple it is. In other words, because of what it does not enable. Mechanically, CTV cannot actually enable anything that is not already possible using pre-signed transactions. The only difference between that and CTV is that one is enforced by consensus, the other is enforced by trusting the people who pre-sign those transactions. My chief focus in looking at proposed changes has always been identifying unintended or detrimental consequences. My criticisms of drive chains are a perfect example of this. Drive chains have been pitched as a scaling solution with no negative externalities to the rest of the network. I have argued for years, initially essentially alone, that that statement is in fact not true. I have delineated the arguments why I assert that is untrue and what negative consequences that would have on the network if it were to be activated. Most of my concern with other recent Covenant proposals essentially boils down to one thing: enabling some variation of drive chains. Drive chains, or similar systems, allow anyone to be the block producer moving the state of the system forward. In practice, this means that miners have a de facto monopoly on engaging in that process should they choose to exercise it. If such a system actually gains adoption and enables functionality that gives miners room to extract value front-running transactions, like on other systems such as Ethereum, then that is an economic incentive for them to exercise that monopoly. That is a centralization pressure for mining, and once you enable such systems, there is no way to restrict what functionality these other layers or blockchains enable, so there is no way to limit them to a degree of functionality that does not introduce those problems. What you need in order to build such a system is the ability to restrict where coins can go in the future, i.e., a covenant, and the ability to ensure that data carries forward from one transaction to another. This lets you create an open UTXO that anyone, read miners, can commit to, facilitating a withdrawal, and can either be allowed to complete or, quote, canceled if it is invalid. This, in combination with the ability to have a second layer state or balances of user funds, changed and updated by anyone according to the rules of the system, gives you a drive chain-like system. If you have a closed, permissioned set of people who can process withdrawals, like a federation, or a closed, permissioned set who can update the state of the system, again like a federation, you do not have a drive chain-like system. It does not introduce the types of MEV risks and centralization pressures I am concerned about. For that to occur, both the PEG and the state update must be open systems that anyone can participate in, and by consensus, are de facto open to monopolization by miners. This has been my bar for whether a proposal is too liberal in what it enables for over half a decade. This isn't to say that it's a hard line that should never be crossed, but it is one that should not be crossed without a rational plan of how to deal with and mitigate the potential centralization pressures it can enable if they do in fact occur. The cult of slow and steady. As someone who has been the conservative voice for half a decade, the critic of proposals from a highly skeptical and paranoid point of view, rational skepticism and caution is essentially dead. Aside from a small group or cluster of people drowned out by the sea of noise, there is no rational analysis anymore in the call for caution and slow pace. There is fat and lazy entitlement, demanding to be spoon-fed everything. The second the spoon approaches the mouth, however, it is slapped away. How dare you try to feed me? The last time there was actual contention around a proposal prior to this current covenant debate was the block size wars. People actually engaged with the issues involved then. People put in the effort to learn and inquire in an open way. Yes, there were the crazies and the dogmatic lunatics, people who would not engage in an honest discussion. This was not the majority of people back then. Even a large portion of big blockers, when challenged, wouldn't just devolve to dogmatic screeching. They would run numbers. They would engage in a discussion of where a sensible line was in terms of block size, and the externality or cost this would present to users. On our side, the winning side, many people joined exactly because of these types of discussions and logical arguments. I supported the first block size increase proposal, Bitcoin XT. I changed my mind because of logical inquiry and discussion. I considered what can actually go wrong, and then investigated how bad those consequences could be. I spent time to better understand the things that I did not understand at the time. That is not what is happening anymore. People knee-jerk and toss out unknown unknowns as a counter-argument to any proposed change. That is not a valid or an intellectually honest response to anything. Everything has unknown unknowns. Doing nothing has unknown unknowns. Doing a single conservative change has unknown unknowns. Doing everything all at once has unknown unknowns. That is the whole nature of that logical category of things. You don't know what you don't know. This is a nonsensical, unengageable argument that can be pulled out ad infinitum and never satisfied. It is not a genuine attempt to engage in dialogue. It is a denial of service attack against it. There are some unknown unknowns, aspects, or consequences of changes that we are aware of, but uncertain how they will play out. This is a rational line of inquiry when discussing a change. Some aspects or possibilities with an uncertain outcome can be identified, and these can be discussed. This is not only rational inquiry, but I think absolutely critical and necessary inquiry in discussing changes to Bitcoin. Just going unknown unknowns in response to every proposal, every discussion of upsides, every analysis of the downsides, to present a balanced view of things, is not a rational response. It is not good faith. By the inherent nature of unknown unknowns, this is an impossible thing to address in either direction. Both changing and not changing Bitcoin present equal risk of unknown unknown. It is inherent in the very nature of what that is. There is an astonishing lack of self-awareness on an intellectual level of this, and a flood of people demonstrating an emotionally driven outlash in regards to acting under that lack of self-awareness in public discussion. The denial of service attack. It's bad enough to not engage inquisitively in private when confronting new information, or in the case of proposals to Bitcoin specifically. It's even worse to take that lack of inquisitiveness out into the public discourse. This constant chant of unknown unknowns and the default is no change and all the other ossification mantras that go even further than that explicitly is not dialogue. It is denial of service. Doing nothing but engaging in the setting of an impossible-to-meet bar, and disrupting any other discussion or conversation attempting to elucidate or expand everyone's understanding of trade-offs or functionality. And then doing that consistently over and over is not engaging in good faith. That is not trying to assess whether a change is safe or not. That is not trying to gauge the likelihood or risk level of unintended consequences. That is just impulsively attempting to stop any and all change for the sake of it. That is not rational. That is frankly just not sane. It is like exercising a veto you hold for anything and everything, and yes, vetoes are important in consensus systems. But disrupting conversation is not the veto. The actions of actual transacting economic actors deciding what software to run or not run is the veto. This denial of service on dialogue is not some noble or righteous crusade to save Bitcoin. It is an active attack on those economic actors and their ability to gain a better understanding to make an informed decision on whether to veto something or not. It is malicious. It is bad faith. I think personally it is motivated by fear. Fear that given the ability to inform themselves, the economic majority would choose differently than individuals who engage like this in conversation. I can really see no other charitable explanation other than just outright stupidity. The environment these conversations occur in is not good faith anymore, and that is not because of people actually proposing changes. It is because of people with their head in the sands constantly running a denial of service attack on the conversation itself. People who refuse to actually acknowledge what they don't know. That is a known unknown if you are honest with yourself. What you do not understand or what you do not understand well. Yet some people, oh so concerned about the unknown unknowns, refuse to fill in the gaps of their own known unknowns. They refuse to actually learn more about the things that they don't understand well. That would be one thing if it was just a quiet choice of an individual, but that is an entirely different thing when those people choose to actively interject themselves into the wider conversation and try to mislead or chase other people away from doing that for themselves. It's kind of ironic, in a way, this playing out in parallel with ordinals and people claiming we need to, quote, filter the spam. Maybe we should. Not on the blockchain, as that is just not possible if the incentives of the system are not fundamentally broken, but in the conversations around that blockchain. This is not a good faith dialogue anymore, and not because the JPEG people are memeing about cats, but because the other side is essentially denial of service attacking everyone else, preventing them from even having a conversation about whether we even like cats or dogs at all. For those of you out there who are not absolutely nuts, who actually hope to own a little Bitcoin in the future and don't want it to be ripped out from underneath them because their exchange got hacked or because they were incredibly reckless and put all of their Bitcoin on a mobile wallet on their smartphone or trusted their life savings to Coinbase. Those of you who are sane probably already have a cold card. But there are many of you who just haven't gotten around to it, or you procrastinated and you said, oh, don't worry, Coinbase will still be there tomorrow. The service that I use, the exchange that I use has been around for a long time. We're all good. Everything is not safe. Even if it's a fantastic custodian who you trust very well, who you know are going to do everything in their power, may be told by their government and have no choice whatsoever to not give you your Bitcoin. And if you think that is unrealistic, then you clearly do not know what just happened with the Tornado Cash people. We live in very politically uncertain times. We live in very regulatory uncertain times. And common sense and sanity are an extremely scarce resource. The best way to protect yourself is to get a cold card and hold your own Bitcoin keys. Withdraw your Bitcoin to your cold card and get yourself a tap signer. Get yourself an OpenDime. There are so many different tools and ways to make this easy to use, easily accessible whenever and in any way that you want it. And you can all do it right on your smartphone without exposing your keys. And you lucky sons of bees who are listening to this can get a discount with code BitcoinAudible, all one word. The link and the discount code will be right in the show notes. Stop procrastinating, be a smart Bitcoiner, be a sane Bitcoiner, and get yourself a cold card. All right, Now, the reason I actually, the reason I felt that I should do this episode or do this read on the show is because I wasn't 100% sure how I felt about it. I agree and disagree in some contexts. I mean, I do agree with the general premise. The quote-unquote dialogue has absolutely, like, without question, fallen in the quality and degree of discourse. And I also have, for a long time, agreed with Shinobi on the whole CTV thing, and it wasn't Shinobi that convinced me. It was actually, I think, Ruben, technically, as I was going through his website and the many, many resources. Oh, wait, no, it wasn't even Ruben. It was somebody who was a early supporter of CTV. Oh, man, I feel really bad. I've got some lost DMs on Twitter somewhere, and we had a really long discussion, and he did a really, really good job of honestly laying out the issues and then giving me resources to actually put my finger on the exact problem, like to see exactly what the situation was, because there's so much FUD and there's just so much nonsense in the kind of social media discourse, if you can call it discourse. It's hard to call it that, because it is just an absolute mess. And it's extraordinary how many completely like incorrect statements or completely incorrect arguments or concepts around CTV and covenants in general were broadly propagated. Like, everybody that I would just run into who was opposing it would literally oppose it for reasons that were not true. I mean, that's why I ended up doing probably like 5 or 6 episodes on this show about CTV. And why I ended up supporting it is because it was literally, of all of the covenant proposals, the most conservative and the most simple. And, you know, there's like a really great piece by Stop and Decrypt on the nature of protocol engineering. What was that one called? Let me actually pause this and look it up. Ah, I found it. It was actually by Beautyon. I was making a mistake between the Invalid Blocks Need Not Apply article with Stop and Decrypt and the Bitcoin and Software Software Reliability, which is an article by Beautyon. But it does such a good job of laying out the principles of the concept of conservatism, why we should be thinking of this as nuclear grade software, and why we should have extreme skepticism and caution about anything that we implement and any changes that we make. And I do 100% agree that that is gone in a kind of frightening way. The only thing that actually kind of gives me a little bit of optimism there is that there is no consensus on, there's a mess of disagreement about anything else trying to change Bitcoin. So it may be less that, you know, while the community and the culture has lost that conservatism in a broad sense, which I think was inevitable. You know, get a whole bunch of dummies and normies flooding into the Bitcoin space, trying to replicate the critical culture of development and the mindset around Bitcoin to protect it ongoing in the social sphere was always going to be an uphill battle. It was always going to be an absolute nightmare. And part of the security there is literally in the inability to agree and the inability to transmit that information properly into the new culture. But then rises the risk of, you know, what if you do get consensus on something stupid, on terrible ideas? The more simplistic and unnuanced, the complete lack of nuance in an idea may actually, depending on how big and how broad the social community of people who quote unquote care and are trying to gauge the shift or the change in the development path, I guess, so to speak, or the development culture, the bigger that gets, the greater that risk is, with the one exception of if we can't get anybody to agree, then likely nothing happens. But I do agree that people are shutting down the conversation. You know, I actually, my thoughts on the block size war and my path during the whole block size war, which it's also important to note that there was an extraordinary amount of dishonesty, and despite the fact there was a conversation happening and people were able to get the information and able to actually have those discussions and you know, develop their understanding of these things, there was also an extraordinary amount of just bullshit, of just claiming conspiracy, of just you're killing Bitcoin on purpose, you know, you're a Fed, all of this stuff, rather than actually having conversations about the technical issues and the actual nuances and trade-offs of all of these different decisions, the different courses of action, the different paths that we could take on the development process and the different proposals that were basically up in the air. But I had a very, very similar experience to Shinobi here. I was a supporter. I don't think it was Bitcoin XT. I think it was like, I think Bitcoin Unlimited was actually one of the ones that I thought was most interesting. And what they had is they were trying to keep it explicitly within Moore's Law, is that there's the 17% increase every single year. And that the thought was that, like, well, what if we actually just followed that? What if we just said that let's just have a 17% increase every single year, set it now, and then just let it go? That'll be the new policy. And then we don't have to think about it going forward. And we have this predictability about what the scale and what the limitation will be without also trapping us into no scale, no increase in the base layer scale at all. And that seemed like that actually seemed like a conservative approach. That seemed like a intelligent way to go about it. And it took a really, really long time. And it's incredible how many people started on the big blocker side who just thought, like, okay, well, yeah, this makes sense to approach this problem and to try to fix this, because this is clearly a problem. And trying to get the understanding and the depth of grasping the level of trade-offs and the risks, especially just in a hard fork at all, in realizing what that even means, especially for such an arbitrary and inconsequential change, when it really comes to the difficulties and challenges of the scaling problem, which are not a simple problem and are not at all solved with any measure of a block size increase. And then the nuances and many different levels of those costs, that it's not just about storage. It's about recall, it's about RAM, it's about the ability to look up the data, it's about the bandwidth in order to keep in sync. It's about the bandwidth, the time, and the computational cost in syncing from zero, because something terrible could happen. And if we lost 40% of the nodes on the network, or 60% of the nodes on the network, if we can't get those nodes back up in 3 days, synced to the network, and back in line with the current state of consensus, we've lost all of that validation. We have lost all of that security in the kind of collective, in the crowdsourced security or individual defense that ends up extending to the collective when everybody participates in its sort of concept of defending the system. And if we've got a 2 terabyte blockchain and it takes 6 weeks, 7 weeks, if we actually extended this chain to the point that the average device could literally only keep up with the tip and couldn't actually sync it from the beginning, we had no idea whether any of the Bitcoin are actually real, whether any of them were even originated in the actual rules of Bitcoin, which are the only thing, the rules themselves are the only things that establish what a Bitcoin is to begin with. If you don't know where they were mined, you have no idea. You have no clue whether they are real Bitcoin or not. Doesn't matter how many hashes or anything that you think you've got, or how deep it is. It's got 100,000 blocks in the chain. That's great. If you don't know where that Bitcoin came from, you have no idea if that's real Bitcoin. You are trusting that someone else did the work for you. But there's an insane amount of nuance. There's so many different levels and so many different things to understand. And I changed my opinion after, I don't know, a year, 2 years probably, and arguing and trying to figure out and realizing just how big the scaling problem was. But it was about having an open conversation. It was about being able to ask those questions and actually getting answers, actually engaging in good faith discussion, which is always a messy proposition, an extremely difficult proposition, when you don't have strong hierarchical organization and a strong, clear culture, and instead you just kind of have like a reactionary cult of defense that is just attack, attack, attack all the time in an effort to prevent anything from going wrong, I guess. But it just, I think the legitimate arguments against, let's use JPEG since he specifically is referring to that, the legitimate arguments against JPEGers and Opcat and all of these things are better. They are going to work orders of magnitude better, and they are going to set the precedent that we actually argue against these changes, and that you actually have to get consensus. You actually have to convince people in order to implement these things. And if we engage with a good faith discussion and argue our case, and if you don't know how to argue the case, don't argue. Don't make a claim. Don't call them scammers. Actually make an argument. And that also doesn't mean that you have to be nice. It doesn't mean that you have to pull punches or anything. You just have to have something of substance to contribute to the conversation. When I refer to it as pooping in the park, I think that's a perfect analogy, and I certainly don't think it gives anybody leeway to say that I'm going easy on them. But the analogy, I think, is accurate in understanding the purpose of Bitcoin and why Bitcoin and the concept of filtering is its only job. Now, there is an element here that I think there is some degree of useful discussion going on, of discourse that's going on. And I think it's just the social media sphere is so loud in the shallowest sense. It's everybody who has the dumbest take that basically gets the largest exposure. It's very much like politics in general, is that you're looking for the lowest common denominator of social discourse, because the lowest common denominator is the thing that can appeal to the largest number of people, which literally means the stupidest thing that's even sounds remotely true is going to be the thing that propagates faster and more widely than everything else. And that's why I think of Twitter, even Noster. Noster's a lot better. Noster's a lot better, but it's mostly because the conversation or the community itself is much smaller and more directed. And of course, you don't have the enrage algos, like the doom scrolling algorithms that try to keep you afraid, angry, and engaged in every, like, put the most insane thing in front of you that you can possibly imagine so that you're enticed to engage with. It's remarkable. Just going to Twitter today to post a simple video. I posted one of my recent Two Sats videos, the Give a Shit Matrix. If you haven't checked it out, you should. I've gotten a lot of great feedback already, so I think it does a pretty good job of explaining it. But Milton Friedman has a fantastic explanation of there being like four different ways to spend money. There are four different ways to actually engage in the use of economic resources and how to spend how to have the capacity to spend those resources. But he never really gave it a name. It was never really formalized. And so I did that on his behalf. I refer to it as the Give a Shit Matrix, and I think it's a fantastic, simple mental model for understanding why the government, why politicians, why thieves, why all of these things are necessarily a net negative for society, and how we actually attach value to things, how we actually know that we care as much as possible, that every single person and every single decision cares as much as possible about the amount of resources it takes and the amount of benefit and reward we get out of it. And there is only actually one fundamental way to do this. So anyway, that is on YouTube and also all the socials. So check it out if you were interested. But I use this all as an example, is that I went to Twitter and it was amazing. I was in my feed for moments, and so quickly I was trying to respond to somebody and give my opinion on something that was so unbelievably arbitrary, that was so completely nothing that I had in my mind to care about today, that I did not want. If you had asked me in the morning to write down the list of the 1,000 most probable things that I wanted to make a comment about or to share with the world today, it would not have made it in the top 1,000. And I got halfway through writing a very nuanced and like trying to really get down, hone the argument of my opinion on this issue. And I got halfway through it and I was almost done. I was basically like, I wanted to post it. And then I just looked at it. I looked at the thread again. I looked at my response and I said, I don't care about this. Twitter put this in front of me because it knew I was going to be enraged. It knew that I was going to be pissed off. And it knew that I was going to have an opinion on this because it's seen me do this 1,000 times before. And I have no reason to be here. And so I just said, I'm just not going to. And I deleted the whole comment. Even though I was basically done, I was like, I'm just not. I don't want to be spending energy on this. I'm done. It's a sunk cost. Get it the hell out of here. And I got back to my work. I got back to the things that I actually cared about. But in that sphere of, in that context, I guess, Twitter is a great, social media in general, is a great way to reach a lot of people. But it is not the place to have the discussion. I have increasingly just stopped engaging. I just post over there. I can't tell you how many times some drama has happened about God knows what, about a person or about a thing or about a wallet or a company or a mining or whatever. And every single time I dig down into it, the impression that I got at first glance and the impression that most of the people walk away and continue to carry with them and bring up months, even years down the road is wrong. It's so wrong. It has nothing to do with what actually happened. Nobody bothered to take the time to look into it. That's why I think those social media environments are great for reaching a lot of people, but the discussion should not happen there. They should move to a new place. And I don't know what that, I wish I had a good example. I had something to give as like, where should that discussion happen? Like, it's not exactly a simple proposition, you know, like, is it a forum that we should care about, or, you know, and you also have to get people to actually engage in that conversation. Even GitHub discussions have become messy and contentious. And I see a lot of people basically talking past each other rather than actually having a discussion. And, you know, I think a lot of this actually is the fact that, you know, when groups start to define themselves, like the Bitcoin maxis and the crypto people and the Taproot wizards and all of this, these things, is the conversation, big blockers and small blockers was another great example. The conversation starts to shift around which clan you're in rather than what is actually being discussed itself. And I think a part of that comes from just having a community that is around for long enough to basically, and large enough to develop quote-unquote clans, you know, to develop tribes among the social sphere, which always dumbs the arguments down to just the most base of groupthink. And like Opcat is actually a decent example of this, because I think there's a ton of people who support Opcat for the simple reason that they think it will piss off the Bitcoin maxis and then it does something special for the JPEGers and all the inscriptors and ordinal people. And then there's a ton of people who just outright reject it and hate it for the exact opposite reason, because they think it's good for them and therefore they should dislike it, when I think there are extremely legitimate and very sensible reasons to reject or to oppose something like Opcat. But if you're not making the actual argument, or you don't know what that actual argument is, I think it not only messes up the discussion, it not only makes it appear shallow and makes it appear as if there is no actual argument against it when it's baseless, or it's just based on, you know, people are just arguing one way or the other because of which tribe they're in. But even more importantly is that it drowns out the people who are actually making arguments. And people on both sides who need to hear the actual argument never see the legitimate discussions. And that's why I I don't know what it is, and you know, I'm not really proposing anything. I just think from the nature of trying to have a discussion, I think social media and these kind of public protocols and public conversations that are occurring, I think it's important for them to basically be doorways, for them to be kind of community aggregators to get people to move to a different location that is actually built around having real conversations. And I don't know if that's like, oh, we should build something on Nostr or with Nostr or Keyed or something to have this conversation. We should, there's already a solution. We should just go back to the Bitcoin Talk forums or GitHub or whatever it is. Like, I don't know what that solution is. And I'm not really proposing that anybody should know. And I doubt it's anything that can even be dictated. You know, it's one of those things that just kind of emerges as people seek it out. And that's kind of what I think I'm calling attention to, is I think we need to be seeking out a way to a place to have an honest discussion and trying to recreate it. Like, one of the things that happened during the block size wars that I actually thought was a fantastic thing was bringing a lot of people to the table and having these constant meetings around the world with different actors in the space, different developers, different people in the community. And, you know, there's a million different reasons why you could all be criticized. What makes this person a influencer? Or like, why does this dev matter? Why does this, oh, you're just getting all the miners together and the miners are going to agree. And everybody tried to label it and try to put all of this particular weight on it, or say that like, oh, this group's going to just decide for everybody, rather than recognizing that that was simply never going to be the case. There's not going to be one group that decides for everybody. There's not going to be one group of developers that all agree one way. And what's going to happen is we're going to have this conversation. We're going to need to have the conversation a million different times with a bunch of different groups of people and all of the people that do matter. And I don't mean that in the sense that like over everybody listens to them, they're the only people who matter. I mean it in the sense that the people who are actually care about seeking some sort of a solution, who actually care about are arriving at an honest decision or an honest conclusion to some sort of debate or about some sort of issue, no matter how hard and messy and uncoordinated that is. But I think those spaces just kind of emerge if you try to have the discussion. You know, just attempt to create a space for the discussion. And even if only 10 people are there, maybe it's 10 people who make a difference. Maybe it's one person who can make a difference, and they can take that conversation. They can take what they learn to another place. And, you know, I read this article. I started this off by saying I didn't totally agree with it. I guess I didn't really challenge it a whole lot. But I was a little on the fence, or just kind of like, you know, I didn't read it thinking, oh, I agree with everything here, but there were a lot of points that were brought up, and I think it's a really useful perspective. But more than anything, I think the fact that I didn't agree with it, but I thought it was an extremely fair point to bring up and something very worth talking about in the conversation. Like, this was an honest conversation in the sense that, like, I think this article, I think he has a point. I think he's bringing up something important. And despite the fact that I have very strong opinions about everything, about a lot of things, I do try to admit where I'm out of my league, or where I don't know what I'm talking about. And regardless of whether I have that opinion, I am happy to discuss. I want to be open to that conversation. And I think he makes a really strong argument as to why that is important and why the quote unquote denial of service, to disallow that conversation, is damaging to us in so many different ways. And just for the record, I am anti-opcat and I am entirely and completely pro-CTV because I don't know a ton about opcat, but the little bit that I do know makes it look messy and like a very, very bad, like the exact opposite of the conservatism and the caution that makes Bitcoin essentially possible, the protocol design possible to begin with. And then exactly the opposite or the same in reverse when it comes to CTV. And also, I spent a very long time trying to make sense of that. And I still have a lot of runway to make when it comes to something like opcat, because as I fully admit, I do not have extensive knowledge of it. But that's also part of the reason why I reject it basically outright by default, because I'm not going to support something that I don't understand. I want to go into this with extreme caution. It's a huge change that we really do not know almost anything about, and I think enormous amount of people are pushing it without having any idea what it is or what it even does. As someone who has tried to wrap his head around exactly how you would actually build something with it and how you can do that, and then try to read some of these scripts that people are building with it, I don't see how anybody's supporting it. Like, maybe five people who are supporting it actually understands the scope of what you could do with this thing and the potential risks. So all of that is really just kind of a tangent. But I just wanted to give my opinion about those two proposals since I brought those up. And I wanted to give the level of knowledge and my frame of reference on why I hold those opinions about those two things. And I'm happy to hear discussion of both. And I think Shinobi makes a fantastic point that we have to stay open to discussion. We have to be able to have the legitimate arguments. And if every argument we have is just about which tribe is winning or which group we're in, and we can't correct that at all, we can't turn that boat around, I think that can be a big problem for us both today. I think it is a big problem for us, and it will continue to be a problem down the road. And so talking about that, bringing awareness to that, and letting people seek out that place to have honest conversations and for everyone to try to have an honest conversation is something that we should be carrying with us. So with that, thank you to Swan Bitcoin, a thank you to CoinKite, and to the Audionauts, and to everybody who supports this show. I am Guy Swan, and until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys. You don't win a debate by suppressing discussion. You win it with a better argument. Frank Sonnenberg.